Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Let's do the opening chant. And unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000,000,000 kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning. You know, this morning I'm going to keep talking about the Genjo Koan, but maybe in a little more personal way. What I'd like to talk about is the lines that Dogen says. This is a different translation than I usually use, but this is Thomas Cleary. Acting on and witnessing myriad things with the burden of oneself is delusion. Acting on and witnessing oneself in the advert of myriad things is enlightenment. So advert means to pay heed to something, to pay attention to it, to something or someone. So kind of paraphrase this would be something like, acting on and witnessing oneself by including or paying heed to others is enlightenment. And then, of course, the other line from Genjo Koan, forgetting oneself is to be enlightened by all things. So what I want to do this morning is I want to talk about this in relationship to social distancing, the mitigating activities that we're being asked to engage in. So this question about forgetting the self means to drop the selfish self. So it's paying heed to myriad things. It's doing this in a way that we ease the suffering of ourself and in particular the suffering of others. So that's why Dogen said, forgetting the self is to be awakened by all things and we are enlightened. So he says, forgetting the self is to be awakened by all things. We are enlightened, our life is illuminated by what we call the other. In other words, myriad things come forth and enlighten or illuminate our understanding about our life. It's not just about our own ideas about our life. And so then we realize, in this Buddhist sense, what we're realizing and forgetting is that it's not just about us, that it's also about the other. And the way we do this is realizing that self and other are not different from each other. So in this way, we forget the self, and we forget to separate ourselves, and we join with our life by knowing communion with all of life. So I want to talk about how does this relate to what we're doing now with the coronavirus. And actually, this in some ways was a difficult lecture for me to organize because I was thinking about it. And originally, I was thinking about it maybe too intellectually. So I decided that I would make this a more personal lecture, more personal examples. Nevertheless, this talk is about all of us. And it's from the perspective of my own experience, but it also arises from conversations that we've been having after Zazen, when we've been Zooming with each other and talking about things. And it's also being generated by an email from one of a Sangha member about their thoughts, very thoughtful ideas about the effects of whether we follow or don't follow social distancing, wearing masks, or doing things like respecting park closures, beach closures, etc., that have been happening here in Santa Cruz this last week. So, you know, I wanted to talk about my own feelings about this and my own practice around this kind of thing. So, on one side, I've been feeling impinged upon by people who don't follow these rules or guidelines that we've been given. And conversely, I found myself not following the rules myself. And so how is that? But first, I want to talk about the first thing about feeling like I myself am being impinged upon by people who are not following social distancing in a way or engaging in these mitigating activities in a way that I feel safe when I'm around them. So here's my example about this. And I have probably a lot of examples about this, but I'm just going to pick two examples here that have come up for me. You know, Doc and I, we used to like to walk on the Capitola Esplanade down by the ocean. And lately we stopped doing that because our even walking along East Cliff Drive along the ocean in general, because it just feels like there's too many people out there and that a lot of those people are not following social distancing. So that's, you know, that's made it difficult. But in particular, the example I want to give, one of the examples is going and walking along the Esplanade and over by the Pleasure Point pizza window, you know, they serve to-go pizza. There's like all these kind of clumps of six or seven younger people who are clumping around buying pizza, standing there waiting for their pizza. And, you know, they don't have masks on and they're not following social distancing and they're taking up a lot of space on the sidewalk. So you have to kind of walk out on the street to get around them. And, you know, as a person who's, I guess you could say, not young anymore, you know, my ideas about this is that maybe they just are not thinking about this, you know, that maybe they feel like the rules don't apply to them because they're younger and they're not in that demographic of people who might get sick. And I realize that this is not applicable to everyone who's younger than I am. But then, you know, so, and I also make these jokes about people who are younger not having a completely developed frontal lobe. Maybe the good thing about making jokes is humor is always good, you know, kind of releases our energy and gives us a chance to have a laugh, get a good deep breath. So, you know, those are the kind of feelings that come up for me under a situation like that. So then I think about, on the other hand, you know, about, like, for example, I might think, well, why, you know, why doesn't Pleasure Pizza just close? Why do they keep, you know, having this open to-go pizza place down on the Esplanade? And then I think about the fact that there are so many people who have lost their jobs. And, you know, this kind of job down there making pizza, just exactly the kind of jobs that people are losing. You know, the people who have jobs where they can go home and work from their computers or whatever, that's, you know, that's swell and that's great. But the majority of people who are losing their jobs are people who cannot do that. And so I think, you know, the person who owns Pleasure Pizza is trying to avoid financial ruin. And we also know how incredibly difficult it's been for people to get these loans for small businesses. So from that side of it, I say, you know, I can really understand why the owner of Pleasure Point Pizza is still open and why people are still working there. So, you know, that's kind of the other side of this whole question for me, thinking about it, is I, you know, I might feel some discomfort, anger even at people. But on the other hand, there's this other side of it, of how people are thinking about it and legitimate ways of thinking about it in their own fear. You know, so my concern about walking on the Esplanade or whatever comes from my own fear. And on the other hand, they had their own fears that they're concerned about that are also functioning in the situation. The other thing I noticed is that I'm a little frightened of kids, little kids, right, when we go for a walk. Like, you know, they're little kids who are kind of mindless and they're on their scooters and their skateboards or whatever. And, you know, I think, oh, are they going to sneeze or cough on me? And then I think about, you know, I think, oh, this must be really hard to be at home with a bunch of little kids, you know, or even one little kid, you know. That's really hard if you're a parent and you're at home and you've got children at home and they need to get outside just like I want to get outside and get some air. Little kids need to get outside and get air too and run around and use up that energy. So I think about that, you know, and I think that there's that side of it too. So it's not just about me. And so I say, you know, what's my practice in this situation? Well, how do I practice with this when I'm feeling anxious or worried? And I'm looking around, I'm going, oh, you know, basically I'm talking about other people being unpredictable. And they become unpredictable for me because they're not wearing masks or they're not following those rules that we've been asked to follow. So what do? You know, do I go up and I yell at people or do I get angry or do I just say to myself, get over it? Do I chide myself for being afraid? do I go up to the parents and say, well, you should stay at home, you know, and take care of your rambunctious kids at home? Or do I confront these younger people and tell them how selfish I think they are? Or do I write an editorial to the Sentinel? You know, how is it that I practice with these feelings and thoughts that I have? So I say to myself, when do I carry myself forward? When do I pay heed to the needs of others? What, you know, how is it that I can suss out exactly how that is and what I should do or not do? So, you know, I think to myself, my solution to that from my point of view is to say, okay, well, you know, it's actually not that big a deal for me not to walk on the ocean right now, next to the ocean right now. And really what I most want to do is not harbor ill will. I want to cultivate empathy in this situation. I want to accept my struggles when I'm not able to bring forth equanimity. And I want to remember my vow to really make an effort to do this practice. So the effort in this practice is not how can I get other people to do what I want them to do, or how do I get other people to do things that perhaps are more comfortable for me or less frightening, but how do I work with my own issues around this? How do I cultivate empathy, not provide, you know, getting caught in ill will? Because we live in a complicated world, and people have a lot of different agendas. And in this case, I really do wish that people would follow the guidelines that they're being asked to follow. But on the other hand, I don't want to be a confrontational about it in these situations. I just want to avoid people who are not on board because it makes me feel more comfortable and eases my anxiety. And, you know, also the Buddha once said about this kind of thing, he said, if you're walking on stones, I'm paraphrasing, he says, if you're walking on stones and your feet hurt, don't try to pave the world, get a pair of sandals. So in this way, he's saying, you know, getting these sandals, I think in this situation is a good idea. So the basic idea is that, you know, we can't change everything around us to fit our own comfort level. So that's one side of this that I've been thinking about my own anxieties about this kind of thing. But then on the other hand, on the other side of this, I myself have been engaged in times when I haven't followed social rules and have thought about that as well. So the other morning, Jocko and I came to the Zendo, and we usually come about 6:30 for Zazen because, you know, we do this Zoom meeting now. And there was a guy in the parking lot who had the back of his car open, and he was already in the building here, and he's one of our coworkers who works in an office down the hallway. And he had on this really substantial mask that he was wearing. And what he was doing was getting an office chair from his office so he could work from home. And, you know, I was talking to him. I was 6 feet away. But was I wearing a mask? No. I was standing there with a mask in my hand while I was talking to him. So, you know, it's kind of like I didn't even put the mask on while I was talking to him. And then I thought about that, and I thought after he had left. And I thought, you know, why would he have that? I mean, he had on a really serious mask with the part that went over the back of his head, and it was molded plastic, and it had like grill work on the front. And I thought, you know, I wonder if he's immune compromised. I wonder if that's why he had a mask like that. I wonder if he came to get his chair at 6:30 in the morning because he figured he wouldn't run into anybody else who was in the building. And there I am, standing there, talking to him with my mask in my hand. You know, so I think about that. I think, well, you know, did I create for him a deep feeling of discomfort? Did I create a situation where out of kind of mindlessness on my part and a sense of, well, you know, we're 6:30 in the morning, I'm outside, I'm not wearing a mask, you know, it's like, I normally don't think I need to wear a mask because normally Jocko and I don't run into anybody. But on the other hand, you know, it's like, how do you know? You don't know. You think you're not going to run into anybody. And there we are, standing there at 6:30 in the morning with this man who works in the building with us, who clearly was deeply concerned about this, and based by the way he was dressed. And you know, I don't know. There I am. I run into this person, unexpected, and I'm not following the rules. So you don't know, you know, if you're going to run into somebody or not. And, you know, I know that I don't want to cause suffering. I don't want to cause somebody else to feel anxiety or fear. And so I felt like I was kind of being mindless in that way, about the way I was responding to this. And so then Dogen said, Dogen also said, he said, you know, don't make up standards on your own. So that's an interesting admonition that we have in practice. And that admonition about not making up standards on your own is this way in which we're being asked to do things that somebody else is asking us to do. In this case, usually our teacher. Or if we go to a monastic environment, you know, we're being asked to do things which are helping us to train and learn how to forget the self, how not to carry the self forward. You know, I think about this issue about not making up standards on your own, and I looked at a graph in the New York Times a couple days ago, and I know to see that you can look state by state and county by county and look at towns, and I saw, you know, Santa Cruz has a very low infection rate. And a well-known infection rate. And it also has a very low death rate compared to a lot of other places. And you can also see that our curve is flattening down. So, and, you know, in this case, I'm being asked to believe someone else's authority. I'm being asked to believe epidemiologists. I'm being asked to believe the things that I'm being told will help mitigate this and will keep that curve low. And I'm being asked to essentially to forget the self. I'm being asked to be to drop the self and to pay attention to these desires, fears, needs, concerns of the other, regardless of my own ideas about the situation. It's regardless of whether or not I have some actual proof of this. You know, I hear about places like Italy. You know, they say, oh, the sirens go on endlessly of ambulances going by one after another. I would think that would be such a visceral, graphic reminder of this pandemic and of the people who are dying. So we're not experiencing that in Santa Cruz. So basically what we're experiencing, for those of us who are lucky enough, as I am, not to be in financial trouble, that we're lucky enough where we can, you know, figure out how we're going to do our work and spend our days, and we're not worried about how we're going to eat our next meal. So this way that, you know, for me, I don't have this right in my face all the time. And so we're being asked to maybe do something that's uncomfortable for us, maybe not take a walk where I want to, maybe drop my resistance to social distancing or wearing a mask and to just do it. You know, the slogan, just do it, wasn't invented by Nike. It's been around in Buddhism for a very long time, especially in Zen. We say, just do it, just this, just follow this, just drop the self. It means that work on the things that you find difficult. Work on the things that you want to resist. So I suggest that we think about this pandemic as an opportunity to practice. We think about this pandemic as here is a real experience of working with forgetting the self, a real experience of investigating the nature of what it means to say to carry the self forward is delusion, to allow myriad things to come forth and meet you is actualization. What does that mean? And here's an example. This example, this real life that we're living, is how we do this in a very, I think in a very poignant, immediate way for us to work with these issues. You know, it's almost like being in a monastic practice period. We're being asked to do things in a very prescribed way that may or may not be comfortable and may not sit well with our own ideas. When I was in the monastery, I'd say, yikes, I have to get up at 4:30 in the morning. I have to follow the schedule. It's no different than saying, oh, I have to wear a mask. I have to go outside, but I'm in my car. You know? So this way of saying, okay, just wear the mask. Just get up at 4:30 in the morning. Just follow the schedule. Just do it. Oh, I have to practice social distancing. I'm at the supermarket. I don't really want to. You know, there's something I want on the shelf, and now I have to, I can just whip right in there and get it, but no, there's this person there, and I need to stand 6 feet away from them and wait for them, and wait for them to finish what they're doing. And so this way that we say, yeah, that's what we're doing here, is we're practicing social distancing. And I have to wear my mask over my nose. I have to wear it. I can't wear it under my chin. I have to cover my chin. I don't like to wear it over my nose because it fogs my glasses. You know, our wearing my mask does not mean I'm standing next to somebody holding it in my hand. So there's, again, there's this way of just do this practice. Just do this practice. Just learn about these resistances that we have. Learn about what it means to really say, forget the self. This is when myriad things are just as important as our own ideas about going to the park, our own ideas about wearing a mask. This is our chance. It's our choice. This is our opportunity and chance to really work with our resistance, to cultivate beneficial action to ease the fear of our neighbors. So I really want to encourage you to think about, if you're feeling resistance to this, to think about this practice. If you're feeling fear, if you're feeling aversion to other people who you wish were practicing and are not practicing it, then think about ways that you can cultivate your own equanimity that don't involve acting out in a way that is, let's say, aggressive. A way that you can, or to find ways to mitigate your own fear in this situation. Maybe it's doing what I'm doing, which is to not take a walk next to the ocean when it's much prettier, but instead maybe to walk along a busy street so you can get some exercise. So there's these ways that we can think about this. So I think part of that is to know yourself. Like for me, I know that when I become frightened, I often become angry. So what is it that happens for you when you become frightened? And how is it that you can soothe and take care of yourself in this situation in a way that's skillful and beneficial? Same thing when we're feeling resistance. To remember, what is our deepest vow? Our deepest vow doing this practice as bodhisattvas is to benefit all beings. That we benefit others and not frighten people. Because that's not what we want to do. I don't want to frighten people. I don't want my coworker to be afraid because I'm holding the mask in my hand. So this way that we really look at our deepest vow. And being in harmony with the totality of our life, which includes the life of our neighbor as well. You know, we don't know. Maybe the guy who was here that has cancer. Maybe he has cancer. Maybe he had cancer, you know. Maybe he's in a vulnerable group. He has diabetes. Or maybe my neighbor has diabetes or whatever. So this way that we remember that other people have sick husbands, wife, children, parents, you know, that we don't know what the situation is for the other person. So that we want to err on the side of being a bodhisattva. So I'm making this lecture personal today because I want to say that this is my practice. This is how I practice with this. And I want to encourage all of us to think about this because I think that this is just the time to do our best to enact and consider Dogen's teaching, to enact considering just doing it. So it's the same way that when we enter the Zendo and the forms and we bow and how we hold our chant card, it's that same thing, you know, with that we just surrender to what we're being asked to do. So this is a time that is very important that we do this. This is the time that really makes a difference. This is the time when if you hold your chant book a certain way, if you don't hold it the prescribed way, it actually, in the real world, in some ways doesn't make any difference. It is the way that we use the forms to break down in a sense, this way of, I want to do it my way. It's a way in which we learn to forget the self. So here is the way that we learn to forget the self in our life, as it is right now, in this culture, in this pandemic, in this real world. So this is why we practice. It's why we are learning to tame our monkey mind. It's bringing the ox home. Thank you very much.